Well, good morning, everyone. Hey, my undergraduate degree was in history. I was a history major with an emphasis in African history and 20th century American history. A wonderful combination that I get to use oh so often. I was planning on being a high school history and government teacher until God stepped in and said, hey, I've got a different plan for what you're going to be doing. Okay, but there's part of me that just absolutely loves history, and there's part of me that still has a little bit of history teacher left in him. So, put the apple right there. All right. Good morning, class. No, it's not upside down. I got the stem right there, man. Trust me, that was one of my classes in college. It's time for history class, and for this whole month, we're going to be doing some history. Behind me is a timeline that says, don't know much about history. Yes, all week long, Sam Cooke has just been going through my mind. But if I sing some Sam Cooke, it will ruin Sam Cooke. So we're just going to leave that one out there. Now, behind me is a timeline that we're going to be using. And you'll notice on this timeline that at that side of it, it begins with a dot, dot, dot. The purpose of this sermon series is not to come up with the exact date that God created the heavens and the earth. We can affirm together that God created the heavens and the earth and everything in the earth. How and when he did that is a different discussion for a different day. That's not the focus of what we're doing here. You'll also notice on this side of our timeline, it ends with dot, 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 because the story's not done. Now, in between the dot, dot, dots is roughly 5,000 years of human history. That's what we're going to focus on, roughly 5,000 years of human history. And here's how we're going to start, a little class participation. And yes, there will be homework. Yes, there probably will be a test at some point because I got to get out all my inner history teacherness out. So I hope you're ready. Here we go, class participation time. What were the key moments in human history? What were the key moments? Could be an actual one specific date, could be an era. Let's have it. What were the key moments in human history? Christ's death and resurrection, the one thing that we already have up there. We threw that cross right there in the middle. We didn't have to put that one up. That one was there. All right, give me another one. What? The printing press, thank you. We are not putting the printing press up there this week. And you get gold star. You get total gold star because we're going to revisit the printing press idea in a couple weeks as part of this series. So like bonus, extra credit points. All right. Give me something else. Yep.
Creation.
Creation will go in the dot, dot, dot section. We know that's there. Man and woman, that's going to go in that dot, 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 because we're not sure when that was. We're not going to get into that one yet. So, what?
The invention of the wheel.
Whoo, we got invention people. We're going to spend a whole morning on inventions at some point. Yes?
Passover.
We're going to throw that one back. You know, if you go, we're going to go about 2000 BC. The Bronze Age is roughly the time of Moses. So the first Passover would be around there, around 2000 BC, roughly. Give me another one.
The fall of Rome.
The fall of Rome. Yes, we had the fall of Rome on there. And fall of Rome, you know the date? Oh, roughly 1000. Roughly the year 1000. But that's a huge deal. Huge deal. Give me another one. The fall of Greece, which would precede that one. So we're going to throw up there. I think we got one that says Pax Romana. Roman Empire, the Pax Romana, the Peace of Rome. Peace is always a weird word to use. There was peace in the world because Rome was hugely violent. All right, so we're going to throw that around 27 BC, around there. Give me another great moment in human history.
World War I, World War II.
World War I, World War II. You remember the dates?
1945.
1939, September 1st. The only reason I remember it started September 1st, 1939, was a friend of ours, Marnie Studva's birthday was September 1st. It's like, hey, happy birthday. Poland got overrun. All right. Give me another important date in human history.
1776.
What? You were born. Declaration of Independence, 1776. Somebody else said Columbus sailed the ocean blue when? And he got lost, and we get a three-day weekend. All right. Actually, what's really interesting about that one is it sets off the age of exploration, which sets in the age of colonialization, which sounded really great for Western Europe, not really good for anybody else. Any other dates you want to throw up there? Renaissance. Who said Renaissance? Conrad, way to go. Okay, I'm going to give you a chance to redeem yourself. Any idea when? Renaissance? Nice, 1300 to 1600, roughly. Well done, Conrad. What was it? The Magna Carta. Who said it? Well done. Well done. Magna Carta, 1215, the signing of the Magna Carta. All right, we're gonna throw a couple more up there. This should get you guys. You guys are doing great. Greco-Persian War, 500 BC. You see the shift of power in the Near East and in Europe. The life of Muhammad, 570 AD. Yeah, the fall of the Roman. Genghis Khan and the Mongol Empire, 1200. Nobody said the Black Plague. We even gave you a color hint there. 1347. Nobody said the Reformation. Come on, what kind of Protestant church are we?
John Calvin, people.
We had Reformation, 1517. We had the American Revolution and such. We had 1066. Why? The Norman invasion of, now, for all of you people that are of British descent, I'm Scandinavian. Actually, I'm 50% Danish Scandinavian and 25% Russian Jew is my combination. And my last name, Stell, was originally Distel because Ponce de Stel led a group of French Huguenots to the New World in the late 1600s, founded Stelton and the Stelton Baptist Church. Every Stell in America can trace themselves to that guy. And Stelton, New Jersey, is where the Stelton Baptist Church was renamed Edison because apparently there was this guy there named Thomas Edison. Whatever. I wish it was still Stelton. All right, so there's the beginnings of our timeline, and we're going to continue to fill it in during the rest of this series. And there's actually a method to our madness, what we're doing this morning, because we're not here just to play history trivia. Because on a historical timeline, every dot on a historical timeline is the conclusion and the beginning of something. Every time you see something on a history timeline, it is drawing attention to the fact that something has concluded or resulted in, and as a result of that, something new began. I'll point out World War II as a great example. World War II didn't just happen. World War II was the result of a ton of factors leading up to it. The signing of the Treaty of Versailles to conclude World War I actually set the stage for a Second World War. The way that all played out, plus the other events of the 20s and the other events of the 30s, all led themselves to that September 1st, 1939. As a result of World War II, it started something else. It begins the nuclear age. It begins the Cold War. It is the beginning of our country's greater involvement in global politics, all as a result of what took place in World War II. When you look at a timeline, every time you see something highlighted, it is the result of what preceded it,
and the beginning of what comes after it. If you look at a timeline of a life, not just the world timeline, if you look at a timeline of an individual life, every dot on there is a result of what preceded it, and it highlights what's about to come. I'll show you what I mean. This is my life. March 27, 1969, I was born. You could say this is a result of something and the beginning of something. 2 years later, my brother Eric was born. You'll see on the screen it says Erder. The reason it says Erder is because I had a speech impediment as a child and I couldn't say Eric. It was Erder. In fact, if you look on my cell phone, on my, you know, my phone book, it still says Erder. It's really funny when I'm in my car and I've got that hands-free and I hit the button and I say, call Erder. And my car just goes, huh? He was my best friend. When I was about 5, my parents got divorced. My mom ran off with a guy. And so it was just my brother and my dad and I, just the 3 of us. About a year later, my dad remarried and I now had a new family, ended up with a new mom. I got a new older brother, a new older sister, and as a result of this marriage, we started going to church. I'd never gone to church before on a regular basis. This was all really new to me. This church thing, quite frankly, weird. Really, really weird. About a year later, my cousin Peter was murdered. Peter was kind of a big brother to me. He's kind of a hero to me as a kid. He's the reason I'm a Boston Bruins fan, because he played hockey for the Berkeley Bruins, and he was killed as a junior higher in Pinole. The reason I put it up there is, as a kid, this is the first time I ever had to deal with mortality. I still have a very vivid memory of going into the living room one night I couldn't sleep and just weeping uncontrollably, and my dad having to try to comfort a 7-year-older as he tried to figure out life after death for a cousin that was no longer with me. Sometime after that, I became a Christian, question mark. Here's why I say question mark. I believe I became a Christian. My theology was a little odd. Basically, for me, Christianity as an elementary school kid was fire insurance. That was it. Hell seemed really, really bad. Heaven sounded better. To be honest, it didn't sound that great. Clouds and singing forever. It really wasn't a big draw for elementary Mike, but hell sounded horrible. And apparently this Jesus guy was my insurance broker to make sure that, you know, I got fire insurance and didn't end up burning. That's all it was for me. And I prayed a version of the sinner's prayer more times than I can remember. Because in my 8-year-old theology, the way I had it all figured out was I had to ask forgiveness for every specific thing, because if I forgot to ask forgiveness for something and I died, I go up to the pearly gate, St. Peter looks at me, pulls out the ledger and says, well, you asked for forgiveness for 84% of your sins, but not for 16%, so you're taking the escalator down. That's how I had it figured. So I was praying the sinner's prayer every night just to make sure that I was, you know, my insurance premiums were being paid. And that was it. That was my understanding of Christianity as a kid. So I was praying the prayers, and I believe that Jesus, because of the cross, somehow took care of that. But that's as far as it went. It was more fear-based than anything else. Summer between 6th and 7th grade, my mom, who lived half an hour away, I saw my mom every other weekend. She and her husband moved to Utah. It was divorce part 2, because now I saw my mom twice a year. And you combine that with going into junior high in general, it was rough. It was rough. Then I got into junior high, did not start well. But then some things began to change. One, you'll see up there it says gym. And if you're wondering if that gym right there is the same gym, yes it is. In fact, this is a picture of us in college. Yes, we have a plethora of spoons and a plethora of hair. So yes, that is Jim Calton and myself. I met Jim in a history class, Miss Polito, in seventh grade at Juan Crespi in Richmond. And we became fast friends right away. Whenever I work with students, one of the things I tell them, and I've realized it doesn't apply only to students, but to adults as well, is this adage: you will make friends and they will make you. You will make friends and they will make you. The people you surround yourself with will greatly impact who you are. And by the way, it is far easier to go to the lowest common denominator than to be brought up by the people around you. So choose well the people that you're around, that are around you. Fortunately, God placed Jim in my life because suddenly I had somebody that was raising me up. At the same time, I got involved with the youth group at the church we were going to, and we're at Alliance Redwoods doing a work camp once. And while we were there, I remember we were in the book of Romans, and I was reading Romans 12:10, and in Romans 12:10 it says, love each other with brotherly affection. And in that moment, I heard Jesus speak to me. I don't know if it was an audible voice or if it's just something I heard deep down in my soul, but it was as clear to me as I am to you this morning. And I heard Jesus say these words: I love you more than you love your brother, which isn't what the verse is talking about at all. Which means Jesus took his own word out of context, which is awesome. But I heard Jesus say so very clearly, I love you more than you love your brother. Huge deal for me, because as a seventh or eighth grader, if you'd have asked me, who do I love most? It's an easy answer. I love my dad and I love my brother. Why? They never left. And suddenly I had Jesus saying, I love you more than you love them. For the first time in my life, Christianity wasn't a fire insurance policy. It's a relationship with a God that loves me tremendously. And at that moment, I began to realize, oh, wait, this is about following Jesus, and I will follow that Jesus. Changed my life. After junior high, I went into high school. It was at De Anza High School. High school was a lot of fun. I got my letter in football, basketball, baseball, and track. I got letters of recruitment for football and basketball. Thought for sure I was getting a basketball scholarship. I was the Oakland Tribune Scholar Athlete of the Year my senior year. I know, shocking. I was the homecoming king. Oh my goodness, the pictures are embarrassing. Everything's going great. Fully sure that I was going to get a scholarship to go play basketball. Didn't. Ended up at Diablo Valley College playing basketball instead. It's a community college, and I've always thought it's odd that they call them community colleges because there's no community there. One of the greatest wastelands in America today is the community college system. It's tremendous for so many reasons, but on a relational end, it's a wasteland. We have a community college in our backyard. There are thousands of kids that need people to come into their life because community college is rough. I no longer had a gym in my life. I was kind of doing my own thing. At the same time, you'll see it says K and M. I had two friends of mine tragically killed while I was in junior college. One was shot and killed. The other one was hit by a drunk driver. And here I was in junior college just trying to figure out life and what this all means again. Transferred to Sac State. Had a new roommate. His name was Jim. So we were roommates for 2 years in college. And he was involved with InterVarsity, Christian Fellowship. My older brother and sister were involved with InterVarsity at UC Davis. My younger brother was getting involved with InterVarsity at UCLA. InterVarsity is a phenomenal ministry to college students. But I got involved there. Jim was one of the Bible study leaders. His co-leader was this senior named Jen, who ended up becoming my wife. While I was there, I also was somewhat attending First Covenant Church in Sacramento on La Riviera before it moved and changed its name. And it was at First Covenant Church on La Riviera down in Sacramento that I heard a guy by the name of Brennan Manning speak. He was one of the speakers there. And again, I was blown away by the relentless tenderness of Jesus. I was reminded again and again that he loves me not because of my performance. He loves me because of him. And I'm set free by his performance. And it undid me. Remember, I came back to the apartment that day, and then Manning was speaking Sunday night, and then he was speaking Monday night as well at First Cove. A bunch of my roommates came with me for some of those. Undid me. It was also during that time that I received my call to ministry. In response to this furious love of God, it's like, God, I will go wherever you call me to go. I was still planning on being a teacher, but I will go wherever you call me to go. And he made it abundantly clear he wanted me to go to Ventura, California. I know, suffering for the Lord. I ended up taking a job at Community Presbyterian Church in Ventura to be their junior high intern. Hold on to this. They would pay me $5,000 a year. I was a history major, not an economics major. I got engaged because, I was making money now. I was working part-time at this church overseeing a middle school group that had about a dozen kids. Within a year, that dozen kids turned into 50 kids. The church made me full-time. We got married. Both of our daughters were born while we were living in Ventura. We were there for 7 years. During those 7 years, I ended up overseeing the middle school and high school ministries, and we were running about 175 kids every Wednesday night. God was just doing some very exciting things in the student ministries there. And then I got a call to go to a church in Gig Harbor, Washington. So we left this booming ministry and went up to Gig Harbor, Harbor Covenant Church, with a junior high and high school ministry of about 30 kids. And again, we just watched God do things. We were there for 16 and a half years. During those 16 and a half years, I was able to be involved in just about every type of ministry outside of singing. That would not have been a blessing to the church. I got to work with children and youth and families and preaching and you name it. I was doing teaching, all kinds of stuff. And God was just blessing that ministry. Right in the middle of it, however, there's a kid by the name of Brian Lemke, who of all the kids I've ever worked with, might be right at the top of the most remarkable kids I've ever had the privilege of being around. Going into his senior year, he got diagnosed with cancer, and on Thanksgiving morning of that same year, I stood at his hospital bed and prayed over him as he died. He was a big brother to my daughters. If you go into my office today, there is a cowboy hat hanging there. Not because I like country western music. I don't. That was his hat. That was his hat. His mom gave it to me. It was out of that tragedy, though, that I was able to work with Brian's parents in the creation of the Northwest Furniture Bank. It's a ministry in Tacoma, Washington, where people that are coming out of difficulty, they're coming out of addiction, coming out of incarceration, domestic abuse, coming out of the foster system, coming out of disasters, these people are given a full household of furniture. Today, the Northwest Furniture Bank is giving a full household of furniture to over 100 families every month. And that came directly out of Brian's death. I was sitting with his dad one day, and we're just kind of sitting there blown away with what God was doing with the furniture bank. And Bill looked at me and says, "You know what, Mike? As amazing as the furniture bank is becoming, I'd trade it all in just to have Brian back." And I said, "Me too." But it's amazing what God is doing in the midst of all that. Was there for 16 and a half years. And then we came to a season of goodbyes. We received a call from this church to come down here. And it became just abundantly clear this was what God had in store for us, that we were supposed to come here. But it meant saying goodbye. And the goodbyes were remarkably painful. I remember my last Sunday at Harbor Covenant. I preached that morning. That evening, they did this big celebration program for our time there. That church loved me more than I deserved to be loved. So Sunday night is the big party. Monday morning, I get on a plane. I fly down to Reno because my mother was about to die. And I was able to get to her. My brother and I were able to pray around her bed and did a little service for the immediate family. Tuesday night, my mom passed away. Wednesday morning, I got on a plane again, flew back to Gig Harbor, did the final youth group, and turned in my key. All within a 4-day stretch. And it just ripped me apart. I remember I got, 3 weeks later, I got into the car to drive down here. And Jen didn't get up with me that morning. We said our goodbyes that night. And I got in the car and I'm driving down the road and I get a text. I know you're not supposed to look at texts while you're driving. I did. It's from my brother who lives in Gig Harbor now as well. And all I said was, "Goodbye, brother." Yeah, I pulled over. I couldn't see. But then I drove my 12 hours to get here. And we are now part of a church that we absolutely love. You guys don't know this, but I brag about you all the time. When I'm with people away from this church, I brag about what God is doing and yet to do because I believe that the best of this church is still yet to come, but I see the faithfulness of God in the midst of what's happening, and I am so glad that I am at this church and get to be part of what God is doing here. And when I look at that, when I look at my story in timeline, I hear the words of Joseph. When Joseph was speaking to his brothers, the ones that had sold him into slavery because they were a bunch of jerks, but he looked at his brothers and he says, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." I look at my story and I see all of this going up and down and up and down, and I see over and over again the faithfulness of God. When I look at my story, I hear the words of Joshua. When he gathered together his people at the end of the book of Joshua, and he says these words to them. He says, "You yourselves have seen everything the Lord your God has done. It was the Lord your God who fought for you." I look at my story, I go, my goodness, God was fighting for me from the beginning. He goes on to say, "Now I am about ready to go the way of all the earth. You know with all your heart and soul that not one of all the good promises the Lord your God gave you has failed. Every promise has been fulfilled. Not one has failed." I look at my story, I go, my goodness, the promises of God that repeatedly are kept over and over again. I look at my story, that's what I see. When I look at my story, I hear the voice of the Apostle Paul say, "I am convinced that neither life nor death, nor angels, nor principalities, nor things present, nor things to come, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate Mike Stell from the love of God." I look at my story, that's what I see. I see the faithfulness, the power, and the love of God relentlessly going after me. I was telling the story of my life years ago to a group of students, and one of the kids goes, "Dude, it looks like Satan keeps throwing a wrench into your engine and God takes the same wrench and fixes the engine." I go, that is exactly what's been happening. "Oh, you intended it for harm, Satan? Guess what? I got news for you. My God is way more powerful than you. And his love conquers anything that you're trying to do in me." When I look at my story, when I look at my timeline, that's what I see. I see the faithfulness and the power of God. My question for you is, when you look at your timeline, what do you see? For that matter, what was the last time you looked at your timeline? All right, class, time to do some work. In the seat back in front of you is this. Pull it out. Here we go. Everybody gets to pull this out. We're gonna do a 1-minute assignment here. A 1-minute assignment. Here's your timeline. I need you, for starters, I'm going to give you 1 minute to put 4 dots on your timeline. 4 important moments in your story. They don't have to be the 4 most important. Just pick 4. They might be something above the line. It was a good thing. It might be something below the line. It was really hard. I want you to write down 4 things in your story. You have 1 minute. Go. All All right, hopefully you've got your four. Trust me, there's going to be a homework assignment. Now, you might be wondering, Mike, what does this have to do with anything? It's a nice little exercise, but what's the point? The point is this. When you take time to remember what God has done, it gives you courage to live into what he's promised to do. At the end of the book of Joshua, again, Joshua has gathered his people together, his farewell address. And as he's gathered them together, he says this, "Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods of your ancestors, the gods your ancestors worshiped beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your ancestors beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Choose this day whom you will serve." And Joshua says, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord," which is a very bold statement to make, which begs the question, what was it that enabled Joshua to say such a bold thing? "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Not those other things, "we will serve the Lord." What enabled him to say that? The previous handful of verses that lead up to this. And in the verses that lead up to this statement, what Joshua does is he does a timeline. He's looking at his leaders and the people and says, "You got to remember what happened. This is what the Lord your God says." He says, "Remember. Remember Abraham. I chose Abraham. And I told him I'm going to bless you so that you can be a blessing. Remember Isaac. Remember Jacob. Remember Moses," he says. "When you remember Moses, remember the plagues of Egypt. Remember how I took your people through the Red Sea." And God goes on to say, "And remember the promised land. Remember how I brought you into the promised land through the Jordan River. Remember the Jericho thing and how I delivered this land to you." This is what God says. Joshua goes, "This is what God says. I gave you a land on which you did not toil and cities you did not build. And you live in them and eat from the vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant." In other words, God is saying, "You got to remember what I've done for you." And when you remember what God has done for you, then you come to a place and go, "Based on that truth, I will serve the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord because this is the God we serve." Now, it's interesting that Joshua's doing this in Joshua chapter 24. And you might wonder, why is he doing this farewell address? I would argue he's following the example of his mentor. Who was Joshua's mentor? Moses. The book of Deuteronomy is a farewell address. It's Moses going, "All right, I got you guys for a little bit more. I'm going to remind you of everything you need to know." It's his farewell address. And guess which word comes up over and over again in the book of Deuteronomy? Remember. Remember. And what does Moses do in the book of Deuteronomy? He does a timeline. He says, "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Do not be afraid of them. Remember well what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt." Remember, and he's talking about the golden calf here. "Remember this, that you worshiped a golden calf. Remember this and never forget how you aroused the anger of the Lord your God in the wilderness. From the day you left Egypt until you arrived here, you have been rebellious against the Lord." Remember, you tend to be that way. "Remember how the Lord your God led you all the way in the wilderness these 40 years to humble and test you in order to know what was in your heart, whether or not you would keep his commands." You got to remember. You got to take time to intentionally look back, because when we take time to remember what God has done, it gives us courage to trust what he's promised to do. When I get in those times of doubt, and doubt isn't a bad thing as long as it's not lazy doubt. When I get in those seasons of doubt, I can look back at my timeline and there I see the hand of God at work and go, "Oh yeah, that's the God who's called me to go forward." I mentioned at the very beginning that on our timeline, we've got dot, 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 because that's not the focus of our discussion during this series. But on this side, there's a dot, dot, dot. What will it take to live well into the dot, dot, dot? What will it look like for us to be a group of individuals that live well into tomorrow? Well, we're going to take time to remember what God has done because it gives us courage to move forward. And over the next 3 weeks, we're going to be looking at how to live well into the dot, dot, dot. And we'll play a little fun with history. And yes, there will be a Gutenberg Press discussion as part of it. All right, you ready for your homework? Oh, yes. All right, here's your homework assignment. Part one, share your abbreviated timeline today. You got your timeline. It's got four dots on it. Share it. If you're sitting at those tables out there, let that be the nature of your conversation. If you go out to lunch today, share it. Parents in the room, share this with your kids and have your kids do it too. And do not underestimate the importance of their dots. You might think they're 7 years old. What could they put down? On mine, there was an awful lot, but by the time I was seven. Your kid might write down that one of their low points is when their dog died. And you might think, well, in the grand scheme of things, no. In the grand scheme of their life, that's huge. It might be the first time your child had to deal with mortality and loss and grief. That's significant. If your kid is bold enough to talk about the first breakup in their life, and you might think, oh, it's just puppy love. No, that was the greatest experience of romantic and emotional love they've known up to this point. That's huge. Do not underestimate the dots on a kid's timeline. But share your four with the people you're with today. Because if you wait until this week, it means you come back and you get an incomplete, and I will fail you. All right? So there's your assignment. I got my wife right here. She's a teacher. She goes, that's right. You knew the assignment. It's not my fault. You didn't do it. All right. Here's part two of your homework. Complete a detailed personal timeline. I only gave you time for four dots. Fill it out this week. Get detailed. If there are verses that come to mind as you are going through yours, write them down. They're an important part of your story to remember what God has done. Because when we remember what God has done, it gives us courage to live into what he's called us to do. When we remember his faithfulness, his power, and his love, it gives us courage to live well into the dot, dot, dot. Would you pray with me, please?